is Rob Stone from Fox Sports.
Hey guys, this is Cole Liker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
You are listening to the Unused Substitute.
The Unused Substitute.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
Get off the pitch!
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Ball's going to bounce, Dennis free in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Rowdies! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Rowdies!
Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Unused Substitutes. We're your Rowdies Talk Radio, your green and gold gospel, live on Radio St. Pete, part of the Beautiful Game Network, and sponsored by Roughneck Scarves and Golden Gold Press. My name is Matt, and on the other end of the internet, at least for now, unless I think we've somehow managed to solve the technical problems, or at least know what we need to do to solve them, if we haven't done it yet, Steven. I know you were there a few minutes ago. I'm assuming you're still there right now. How's it going?
Well, I mean, unless there's a specter taking over my place and now the show's being commandeered by some random ghost, I'm here.
I mean, you really can't ever rule that out sometimes.
This is true.
I just had a weird thing. We had talked about having some possible guests tonight, and I didn't even verify today with either of them that they were still going to call in. You two guys, if you know who you are, and I assume you do, just do that if you want to, at some point. We got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight, Steven. Oh no, did we lose him already? I think we lost him already. We do have a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to go over the Rowdies. Your new, your current, your green, your top of the table. There he goes. Your top of the table Rowdies, coming off a big win last weekend at Al Lang, 2-0 over New York Red Bulls 2. And then we've had some other news come out later, I guess a little bit earlier today as part of it. We'll talk about that as well. We've got two games next week. Well, one game this weekend and one game next week to talk about in the Open Cup. We've got the table. We've got all kinds of stuff. We've got the soccer war starting up again. Like I said, I think the other day, Stephen was like, yeah, we got about a 2-hour show that we could do. I don't know that we're going to try and do 2 hours, but we'll see what we got.
I don't think the internet connection is going to support a 2-hour show, but I mean, let's cross our one bridge at a time. But we do have a lot to talk about. There's a lot of different topics, a lot of different fun things we're going to try tonight. I mean, I'm excited. It's a good show. We won this weekend. So obviously everything is upbeat. Even if the show ends in a burning fire, we're all good. I mean, as long as Thanos doesn't snap us into a non-existence, we're fine. We're fine. Everything's good.
I mean, you can't rule anything out at this point. We'll see what happens though. All right, so starting off with we'll go with the good news first. People like to do it that way. Last weekend, your Tampa Bay Rowdies leapt to the top of the table in the East, and honestly, if we're taking a look at the Western Conference, the top of the league overall in USL in terms of just performances so far. With a comprehensive 2-0 shutout of the at that time top of the table Red Bulls 2. We were even on points, and at least for one night we showed who was clearly the better team. There's not enough I can say about the game. I never even made it to my seat. I met up with some people at the Bayshore beer garden. And end up hanging out the entire game there, watching from the sidelines, listening to the players yelling at each other, the coaches yelling. It was a good time. Steven, walk us through the game. What was your takeaway from it?
Well, I mean, I've had the chance to watch the game a couple times now, actually. Thanks to Guillermo not being there for the game itself. Thanks, Guillermo, for the, you know, capo job that you're doing a great job with. But I had to take over that role this week because he was not able to come into town. So
speaking of that, real quick, like, he promised us some fiery hot takes on the tweets this week, and I don't think I've seen
it. Oh, he got one. He did one. It was whenever he doesn't show up, team like blows out their opposition. So in some ways, we want to say as a collective fan base, thank you, Guillermo, for not showing up, because I think that kind of guaranteed a good, strong victory. So as far as hot takes and this week in Guillermo tweets that we're going to review, yeah, thank you, Guillermo. Appreciate you not being there.
I think we can I'm going to go out on a limb and say we can probably get a similar performance even if he's at the stadium on Saturday.
Hey, we haven't lost yet while he's here, so we're all good.
All right. So there's a lot of good. There's very little bad and really only one ugly. What's, in my opinion, what was your view of the game?
I saw a game where we very, very deliberately went to play a very attacking direct role. When you look back at the fact that we see how the Red Bulls play historically, they've always been a high press team because they've always got great athletes in that system, in the Red Bull system. So we were expecting that because we play kind of a similar style in terms of the type of high press. So this was never going to be a game with a lot of possession. And that was, you saw that in the game for that night, was when we got the ball, we were not looking to make 10 passes in a row. In fact, we never did 10 passings. We did not have a 10 pass sequence all night. Everything was 9 or less. In fact, it even gets a little starker than that when you start really diving into the numbers. Every time we got the ball, we were immediately passing it either straight up the line or just over the top, and everything was just trying to go right at them the moment we touched that ball. And so in some ways, it kind of became a bit of a, I don't want to say an ugly game, but it was very much just one of those direct style, we're going to just try and score a goal each time you play it, and we're not going to try and beat around the bush. This is the intent. And in a lot of ways, both teams kind of played like that. And as a result, it was kind of a fun game because it was very high energy as a result. Like, I mean, as a fan, when you're watching this game, I mean, it was going back and forth fairly across the field most of the night, because every time anybody got the ball, it was immediately, let's just try and score a goal as quickly as possible. So right. It was a very, very entertaining match. And I think when you look at individual player performances, I mean, obviously you cannot ignore the fact that Juan Tejada is like an amazing poacher, and what it takes to be a poacher is having good vision. And he has been able to put himself into positions. And I mean, obviously everybody looks at his work ethic, but his, again, off the ball movement, his ability to find space, like that's the whole reason why he got that second goal, was entirely about space. And I think that's something that can serve him going forward, because not every striker to be, and this is something I've always had a discussion with, where people look down at the level of play that we're at, where, you know, everybody's looking for the next Ronaldo or Messi or whoever. I mean, there's a million players anybody can name that's on the world stage. It doesn't take much for a player to be a long-term professional player. Look at Chris Wondolowski. Everybody remembers him for the gaffe in the World Cup. But that man has played professional soccer for a really, really long time and has been successful at it. Not because he's scoring goals from 30 yards out into the upper 90 off of both posts, but because the man poaches like a demon. And so when I look at this, like, Juan Tejada is not necessarily going to beat anybody in a sprint race. You know, that's not the type of player he is. He doesn't have that kind of pace, maybe in a year or two, but he doesn't have it yet.
Right.
He creates havoc by obviously his pressure, but by the fact that he has a nose for space to get himself in a position to put the ball in the net if it comes to his feet. And that's what makes me excited about him right now, because that's what he's starting to demonstrate, is that level of soccer IQ that, you know, when you look at players that we've had in the past, my famous example is always Daniel Antoniuk, where Antoniuk was always, you know, he was never a sprinter. He was never anybody impressive as far as a foot strength, but the man scored like 15 goals because he knew where to be.
Right.
And I think, I think in some ways that's what's exciting about Tejada. That individual performance of getting two goals against the Red Bulls too, that is phenomenal. And as a quick shout out, the team is absolutely right. That was absolutely deserving of at least an honorable mention when it comes to team of the week type stuff and for the USL as a whole. Because you don't score two goals against the number one teams in the league and not get a shout out for, hey, this is a pretty stellar performance. I don't understand how he did not get at least a shout.
I'm going to assume also from that he wasn't really even under consideration for player of the week, which honestly, I thought he should be after that performance on Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I was kind of surprised too, as far as there's, you know, again, and it's hard because as much as like vitriol that I might want to have against not having him on an individual basis be a player of the week, at the same time, I can't even imagine actually trying to draft that when you're looking at what 36 teams is the USL up to now, plus
right,
you have
right.
The same people are doing all the League One teams too. That's a lot of players you got to narrow down to 11. So I mean, at the same time, as much as I want to say this is awful and let's get the pitchforks and let's get flares and smoke bombs and bomb out HQ, it's like, no, it's I can't. It's a hard job. I gotta give credit on that. But
you know, we could just roll over to USL HQ and just have a little riot in the parking lot.
I used to work within walking distance of there. My building was like, I think, two buildings down from where they were. So for like a while, I really could just walk over.
I say we go for it.
We could. We know where you park.
I've got about 2 months off of work coming up in a few minutes.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I mean, as far as the game itself, that was the big takeaways for me, was that it was a very direct game. And Tejada was brilliant. I mean, as far as his positioning and the trap that he had on the first goal, right in front of the net, the way he did, he like chested that down perfectly to do a setup for his left foot. That was a great bit of skill on his part. So major, major kudos to him for that game. I think for me, like, if we're doing good, bad, ugly, I mean, like, for me, that's my highlight, that him as an individual for that match. I mean, as far as that was kind of where I was going with some of the analysis on that. I mean, what did you have for good, bad, ugly? I mean, did you see anything in particular, you know, watching the game? I mean, obviously you had a chance to watch it at a very unique perspective. You know, I've never had a chance to watch a game down there at the Bayshore Lounge. Well, I mean, what was it? What did you notice from the field level, especially on the far side of the field where you're kind of away from the supporters so you can hear things a little bit better? What did you hear and see that kind of struck out to you there, Matt?
Well, one thing I noticed kind of early on, and I thought this might turn into more as the game went on, there were a couple fouls in the situation. But I don't know. I mean, I could look up his name, I guess. I'm just not really feeling like it. 35 for Red Bull 2. The guy had, like, the dyed blonde hair. Him and Guenzotti were really getting into it in the first few minutes as far as, like, pushing, shoving each other around on and off the ball. And I thought we might see some potential for some fouls, maybe some cards to develop there. It turned out that wasn't where the cards came from in the end. But as far as if I'm going to pick out one thing, and it's funny you mentioned field level, because I always I head down to kind of near the dugout level about 5-10 minutes left to go. Neil Collins came off the pitch, and I don't know if you could see it from up in the stand where you were with the mob, but he comes off the pitch, and he comes over first. He goes over to the mob a little bit and just kind of, you know, it reminded me a lot of like Jurgen Klopp, like going over there and like pumping up the mob. I've never seen him come off the field after a win or a loss with that much like energy. And you know, I talked to him about it a little bit afterwards. He had obviously cooled off a little bit, but he was feeling himself after that game. Like he was into it. He was extremely fired up. This win meant something to him. I did see one of the photographs the team posted where it looked like he was trying to shake the New York coach's hand after the game, and the New York coach was kind of telling him no thanks. I know we all hold particular feelings about a certain team in purple, but as far as this league goes, I mean, the games we've had against New York where, you know, we faced them in the playoffs in the first year, you know, they had that 5-0 win over us the year after, or last year. Like, I'm not going to go as far as to call them a rival, but this is one of the better teams in the league. This is a team that you definitely want to beat, and this was a team that Neil Collins was excited to beat after the game. So he came off the field, and he's kind of pumping his fist, and he's kind of, you know, saying some words that I'm not going to repeat on here about how excited he was. And I put my hand out just to say, hey, you know, coach, hell of a game. And he, I don't know if he was trying to go for like a high five slash fist bump at the same time, but he pretty much came close to tearing my arm off and beating me over the head with the bloody stump. And then gave me a big hug afterwards when we were doing the interviews. Like, you know, the games mean a lot to us as fans, obviously. It means a lot to the players. I've never seen one where I've seen Neil take this much delight in winning a game. And it was cool to see that from him.
Oh, yeah, we could see it from the field. There was no – or from the section. There was no question about it. He was absolutely on fire after that game. And I love it because it reminded me of what he said in an interview last year that I think it was actually with you guys here at the Unsubs. The – you know, somebody had asked him a question about like expectations and what the goals were. And his response was something along the lines of, this is the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Like, we have an expectation because this club represents something.
Right.
And that perspective of the fact that this is not just some run of the mill, random lower division development club that nobody cares about. Like, this is the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Like, this name means something.
Mm-hmm.
The history means something. And I love the fact that with Neil, you can see it, that it's not just a professional pit stop for him.
Right.
Or even in his context, like, because he's obviously a first-time coach on a professional level, this is not just a jump start for him. Like, you get the impression that he wants to make this club an amazing feat as far as what we do year over year, or just in the individual accolades. Like, he wants this area to be represented on the world stage at the highest level we can be. And I think that the reaction you saw after that game says it all, because I think he really means that. And you can see it in his face. You can see it in his passion. You can hear it in the interviews that he gives. He wants this to mean something, and I love it, because that's what I mean, as a fan, I thrive for that, because, you know, for those of us that have been going for like 10 straight years, it means something to us as a group, especially as the people that have been watching the team back from the 70s and 80s and then still go to games today. There's plenty of those people around the stadium. These games mean something to us. It doesn't matter what the level of play is, what league you play in, what fighting is going on in the soccer wars stuff. This team is what matters, period. And the rest of it's just noise. And yeah. I love the fact that you can see it with Neil himself.
And part of it, I think, and I asked him about it after the game, was, you know, I don't know if it was Saturday or if it was Sunday or if it was Friday, but whatever. We're at the one-year anniversary of him taking over. So a year ago at this time, you know, he was on the field. There were two guys that were up in the stands, from the likes of Joe Cole and Georgie Ristoff, who were watching on Saturday, who were on the field playing then. And remember, like, where we were a year ago to where we are now, handing debuts to youth players in the Open Cup, setting club record unbeaten streaks, top of the table, and putting in a dominant performance against a team that you really, one of the teams in the East you measure yourself by. So, you know, I think a lot of it, you know, had to do with that as well. Like, you know, he's really, you know, at the end of his first year of coaching, and he's doing a damn good job so far by this point.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's been fantastic. Because, I mean, that was one of the things that I was worried about the most, is that, you know, for me, I, going into the season, I'm not a huge fan of a 3-5-2 formation. Just a personal preference. There's nothing, I mean, again, I don't think there's anything wrong with playing one. I think I've said this before, certainly off the mic. But, like, that was something that made me nervous. We have made that work like a charm. And
yeah.
It is amazing to see. But that is entirely Neil. Because there's not a lot of teams out there that play 3-5-2. Let's be real. Like, that is not a very common formation in football right now.
No.
And so to see us doing that at this level with a streak that we've been on, That's incredible to me. I mean, it really is. Full credit to everybody involved. This has been fun. I'm buckled in waiting for the rest of this journey this season, because this is, I mean, again, if you've got, this is one of those seasons where if you've got people that are on the fence about going, you get them to these games. You know, it was amazing to watch the crowd that we had this last weekend. But I mean, seriously, this is a timer. If you're ever going to get somebody attached to this team, right now's the time to do it. There's no doubt in my mind.
And it does kind of, and we're going off a little bit off topic. That's okay. It does start to feel like there's more of a buzz than maybe in previous years. And I don't know if that's to do with just the streak the team's been on, whether the influence of the new ownership has had part of it, you know, an effect on as well. I think there's something to do there, at least in terms of the way things are being marketed and being done differently. But yeah, it's you know, you're seeing a lot more local media coverage. And, you know, I even saw, you know, I was amazed last week or 2 weeks ago when, you know, we start seeing local news and sports stations talking about, hey, there's an Open Cup game coming up. And I was like, oh, wow. And now I actually saw a local media station mention that the Rowdies are playing Swope Park. And like, you know, really, are there more than 100 people in the area that know who Swope Park really are? Probably not, but still, like, it feels like the media is getting behind this team a little bit more and putting the emphasis behind it, and hopefully we'll see that translate over time consistently in and around the stadium. And I think it will. I think the things they've done, the changes they've made this year in terms of the game day experience and that kind of stuff is going to pay off.
Yep. Yeah, no, absolutely. I totally agree with that. So let's go ahead and get back on topic of hair. As far as official good, bad, uglies, I mean, obviously I kind of gave a good already for this game. Let's go ahead and wrap this up here. Do you want to comment and use the discipline changes? If you haven't heard yet, the red card to Aduro was kind of, in my opinion, a little surprising. It was only going to be a one-game suspension. I'm pretty shocked by that. Because when I saw that happen in live time, I honestly thought it would be more.
And remember, at first, it wasn't even going to be a red. The official gave him a yellow.
Oh, that would have been a horrific call if he had only given a yellow.
And then a couple minutes later, changed his mind and showed red,
And I feel bad because, I love Aduro. He's great. He's got a lot of fire and passion. He's a great guy. But that was a really sloppy tackle. That was awful.
Well, he owned up to it. He's apologized to it online. And I'm hopefully to the guys. I made some contact. I haven't heard any updates about the New York player. I did see an ambulance leaving Al Lang. I'm going to assume he was on it at some point shortly after he was taken off the field. Hope he's okay. Hope he gets back out there. But I know Aduro reached out and Guinzotti reached out, at least on Twitter, to say sorry, to apologize, and hope everything's okay. I don't know if that factors into the non-handshake at the end of the game. I would assume probably has something to do with the guy doesn't want to see his player get injured. So the Aduro one, which, you know, at first the referee said yellow and then said red, and then you thought might get stretched out to a 3-game instead of a 1-game suspension, has stayed at a 1-game. But then there was another change. Diakite had received a yellow in stoppage time, and I'll admit I completely missed it. I didn't see the action. I didn't see the card. Wasn't one that was in my head. And then today the yellow has been enhanced is how we say turned into a red card. So we'll be without both of those guys this weekend. Against Swope Park, and I don't mean to keep putting down Swope Park, but if you're going to miss a game right now, miss Swope Park.
Yeah, I if you go back and watch that tackle, it was funny because, and you and me discussed this before the show, I didn't remember it off topic, like right after the game, but it was funny because when I watched the game again, and I saw that tackle like on the broadcast happened, I was like, oh my gosh, that's a horrible tackle. I mean, it was pretty much a 2-footed cleats up slide tackle from behind, and he basically trapped the guy's leg underneath him. And it was like, I'm not even sure what he was thinking there, because it was kind of like there was never a chance that he was ever going to get the ball. I'm kind of wondering if the reason for the maybe lack of a handshake or whatnot after the game was maybe Neil tried to defend it a little bit or tried to brush it off, and that might be a good reason why a coach might not like you right now. But you know, as far as, like, watching that again, I was surprised that that only got a yellow card when I rewatched that game. That was one of those, I really was kind of surprised that that was only a yellow. So when I heard, when we found out today that that ended up becoming a red card, I honestly, from a neutral perspective, that made sense. That was that's a good decision on the retrospect. So now, though, we look ahead a little bit because obviously now we're down two important defensive players. So this might get a little interesting against Swope. But as far as thoughts on Red Bull 2, is there any last things that you can think of that you want to bring up as far as a topic?
Other than our man of the match, I think that's it.
Which for me is Tejada.
Yeah, sometimes it's the easy out to pick the guy that scores the two goals. I thought Poku played a great game. We saw some good performances from around the field as well. But I mean, this is a breakout game for Juan Tejada. And I know you haven't had a chance to yet, but to come down when we do the player interviews, if you ever just need, like, you know, a shot of just pure joy in your life, talk to Juan Tejada after a game like this. Like, he's just so much fun to talk to. Like, giant grin. He's just, you know, like kid in a candy shop right now where he's, you know, we saw the video earlier in the week of Joe Cole coming out to training and working with the guys and Juan kind of giving him almost like a bear hug, big high five, whatever, a slap on the back. So, you know, here's a kid who was, you know, not a professional player at this point last year, and now he's, what, 3 goals into his professional career. In the league, he's making starts. I will say, like, I thought it was going to take a while for someone to replace Georgi Ristov as, like, a fan favorite, not necessarily in terms of production. And I don't want to say that he's replaced him, but he's obviously the heir apparent right now.
I think further because there was a different comment on Twitter from this week where somebody had made the comparison about maybe this is the new Luke Mulholland.
And
I like that comparison a lot.
I gotta see Juan dive over the ad boards first. It was my response to that one. But yeah,
Or taunt the opposing supporters in some capacity, whether on the road or at home. Like, that was, Luke had some fun with it, and it was fun to watch. I think that was one reason why we all loved watching him play, was not just because he was a great talent, but he had some fun on the games, like on the pitch itself, as far as taunting or enjoying the moment.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's been fun. Tejada's great. Obviously, you know, you just mentioned, like, I haven't had a chance to go in and do anything post-game as far as interviews yet, but I've had a chance to interact with Tejada post-game. After the games, as far as after everybody's leaving the stadium and things like that. And yeah, no, you can see it in his eyes. He loves it. He loves it here. He's kind of one of those players that, like, loves life at
right.
the moment. So, like, you can just see the passion and the fire that he has. And it's just, you could see it bleed over in his game. And you could see it kind of, you know, the energy kind of pulsates, not just around the team itself, but, I mean, the stadium and what the fans do to get into it. Yeah, he's definitely rallying himself quite the following right now.
Which is nice, because that's something else that I think that a club needs when you're talking about building the buzz in and around the stadium and building the following. You know, he was interviewed last week on the local media, kind of talking about his whole pathway the last few years. And I think that's an important part to have. Like, you kind of got your special guy, like your guy that goes out there and gets the fans going. But let's move on. Other Eastern Conference scores from last weekend. And then we've got actually two games going on tonight. Indy beat Charleston 1-0. Louisville and St. Louis drew 0-0. So did North Carolina and Birmingham. Nashville and Charlotte drew, but at least they scored goals. It was 1-1. Hartford finally got a league win to go with their Open Cup win. 2-1 over Loudoun. Swope Park, who we're going to play this weekend, drew 1-1 with Atlanta United. Bethlehem Steel dropped a 3-0 decision to Ottawa. And then something you've introduced this week. Do you want to read this part out since it was your brainchild here? Oh, man.
I'm not actually 100% sure what we're
the notable games.
Well, I mean, so what we're looking at right now is obviously we want to pay attention to what teams are in the playoff picture. And you know, we want to make sure that people are watching those games, because obviously we want to bring more league awareness set in general to the fan base. So, like, if you are, you know, obviously nobody's going to be expecting anybody to watch every single game. Like, who actually wants to watch Hartford and Loudoun when you are top of the East, right? I mean, let's be real. So one of the things we wanted to pay, at least pay attention to the games that matter to us as far as who may affect us in the playoff future or who we may end up facing in the playoffs down the road anyways. So obviously, as far as that's concerned, upcoming this week, Red Bulls play North Carolina. That's a good game. It's North Carolina's traveling for that game. So that one should be fun. That one's obviously going to be a pretty big bellwether to see how well New York can respond to what happened this past weekend. North Carolina's still kind of struggling in a bit of a rut right now in terms of they can't seem to get themselves going, per se. So they're kind of still floating in the 7 through 10 range for standings. As far as other games that we noticed in particular, Indy plays Nashville. That is a very, very, very good game. Mm-hmm. You're talking a couple of teams in the top five in the generics, and pretty much not just the generic standings, but even in the points per game standings, that's two teams that are in the top five. So, you know, that's one of those things where if you've got nothing to do on a Monday afternoon or something at work and you want something in the background, that's a fun game to watch, because that's going to be one that's going to be important to us later down the line. The last game that we noticed, I believe, is actually being played tonight.
Yeah, it's at halftime right now.
Yeah, that was your Birmingham-Nashville game, I believe. So
yeah, Birmingham currently checking in at number 10 on the at least the regular table. I didn't memorize our points per game table. But Birmingham-Nashville are 0-0 at halftime. Not as notable, but also still going on. Well, I guess we could call it notable because we're playing them this weekend.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Swope Park is level with Memphis, 1-1 at halftime wherever Swope Park calls home. I don't even think they're – I think they play at Sporting KC Stadium now, don't they?
Yeah, they play at Children's Mercy Park.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 1-1 there at the half. Feel free to, I don't know, like 10, 15 minutes of stoppage time, second half. We'll tire these guys out a little bit before they come flying down here for the weekend. So our current, we're going to compare our traditional and our points per game table. I'll talk about traditional, and Steven, you can go over the point per game. Well, we might need to do a projection for this if Birmingham Nashville stays the same, but we can go with what we just have now too, I guess. Top of the table, number one on the list, and number one in your hearts, the Tampa Bay Rowdies, 3 points ahead of New York Red Bulls, 2 in second place. Nashville in third, St. Louis in fourth. Both of those teams are 4 points back of the Rowdies. Indy 11 in fifth, 6 points out of first. Ottawa Fury and Louisville City in sixth and seventh, also on 17 points. North Carolina and Charleston, 8th and 9th, respectively. Also level on win. There are 16 points level. Both level on 4 wins, and it goes to goal differential at that point. North Carolina leads with a plus 8 to Charleston's plus 3. And then, like we said, at the bottom of the current playoff team rankings, at least, Birmingham Legion, 3 wins, 4 losses, 4 draws, a minus 8 goal differential on 13 points. You've got three teams just behind, 1 point behind Birmingham in the just out of the playoff spots: Bethlehem, Memphis, and Atlanta. So getting a draw tonight is kind of big for Memphis. They could jump into that. They would actually, yeah, because Memphis would swap places with Birmingham tonight because they'd be level on wins, but Memphis would have the advantage on goal difference at that point. 14th is Pittsburgh, Loudoun United at 15th, Charlotte at 16th. This weekend's opponent, Swope Park, 10 games, 1 win, 6 losses, 3 draws, a goal difference of minus 11 with 6 points. And then Hartford, 1-9-1, 4 points at the bottom of the list. The other thing, and I usually mention this in the bench, but I'll talk about the bench in a little bit too. I always like to throw in there, like, what team's in the best form right now? And also us. 3 wins and 2 draws in our last 5. Louisville will be next, but they've got 3 wins, a loss, and a draw. And I believe there's Pittsburgh has 2 wins and 3 draws. So if nothing else, it's a sign of the quality of the team. Like, we're top of the table. We've got, well, we're tied most wins. We've got the biggest goal differential. We've scored, I think we've probably scored the most goals, most points, and best form so far. So sometimes you take a look at your team and you're like, well, are we really this good? And a lot of the stats right now for the Rowdies say yes. But let's take a look at the points per game table. What do we got, Steven?
Yes, because the big thing about this is that even though we've got a good advantage on the overall table, the fact is when you look at what teams are that we have games that have games in hand against us, I mean, you look at the fact that Indy and Ottawa both have only played 9 games and have 17 points. They are within striking distance on par with us as far as kind of the generics. So, I mean, we're not separated yet. That's the big thing that's important to keep in mind here. So when we look at points per game in terms of where that shapes the playoff table, top three remain unchanged. Rowdies, New York Red Bulls, and St. Louis are still your 1, 2, and 3, but the margins are really super thin. I mean, obviously, like, Rowdies are averaging 2.09 right now. Red Bulls are at a flat 2. St. Louis is just a tenth of a point behind that at 1.9, and then it goes to a hundredth of a point after that for Indy and Ottawa, both have 1.89. So the margins are thin. There's no question about that. So, like, when you see games that are drawing, and this is something that we've seen a lot of right now, is there's a lot of teams that have been drawing these big games, and it's and like 2 weeks in a row now. So that's been helping us kind of push up the table overall, not just overall, but even on the points per game basis. That's been helping. After that, you go down to Nashville's down to a 1.63. They dropped 2 places on the points per game table, which is an important drop. North Carolina, they're at a 1.6 along with the Charleston Battery. So that's your 7 and 8. Your final 2 wildcard spots, 9 and 10, being Louisville City at 1.55. That's a big drop with Louisville, by the way, because they're kind of up there on the overall table. The Louisville drop puts them back, I think, to another 2 spots.
Yeah.
And then you've got your 10th place team right now going into tonight was Pittsburgh, which is important because on the overall table, Pittsburgh's down at like 13. They jump all the way to 10 on points per game because they've played so few.
They've only
played 8 games this year.
Fewest in the conference so far.
Yeah, so they're at a 1.38, and there's a couple of bubble teams out of the playoff picture. Birmingham, who again is playing right now, they're on a bubble on points per game. So they're looking for points. They're looking to get some consistency. They're at 1.2, and then there's 2 teams at the 12th spot. Looking in, they're at 1.09, and that's going to be Bethlehem Steel and Atlanta United. So, yeah, the big differences as far as the difference between your regular table and your points per game is that Nashville and Louisville are a bit lower. They need to get some results quickly because they've played a lot of games. They're a bit lower on the points per game chart, and Pittsburgh is actually a playoff team when you start looking at points per game. So that's definitely a team to look out for. Otherwise, your top three – and overall on the table, your bottom 5 are unchanged, but everything else in the middle flip-flops at some capacity. There's a lot of movement on when you compare the two.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at your top 12 overall here because we're going to throw Birmingham and then the Bethlehem ATL in here. And there seems to be some clear kind of chunks, like, you know, different areas of the table. Like your top 5 teams are all, like, you know, between 1.89 and 2.09, so 0.2 of a point separating them. And then you drop down, you've got Nashville through Louisville City are all either just above or just below 1.6 points. So that's kind of your mid-table there. And then you've got Pittsburgh at 1.38, which really seems to be, like you said, the team to kind of keep an eye on as they start to pick up games. And then Birmingham, Bethlehem, and Atlanta, all but 1.2 to 1.09. So you've kind of got 3 kind of distinct little layers here as far as there's no, you know, definite separation between individual teams, but you can kind of see who you think. And I know one of the USL writers posted about this week. There's still a lot of games left to be played, but you kind of start to see who you think are going to be the teams to beat and the teams to keep an eye on in the Eastern Conference. Looking at this top 5 here of us, Red Bulls 2, St. Louis, Indy, and Ottawa, I think those are clearly teams that you can expect to see in the playoffs and probably in contention for those home game spots. And then down here at the bottom, your Pittsburghs, Birmingham, Bethlehem, ATL are teams you're going to see probably fighting for those play-in games to get in there. So you can't like make a call at this point, but you can start to lean certain ways on certain teams, I would think.
Absolutely. And I think that's and that's the thing, as far as from a Rowdy's perspective, it's important to look at this because you know what games are going to be important. It's good to be knowledgeable on this. Like, you want to know what are the important games, what are games we can sleep on, or at least come to expectations of we're going to win versus we have to really put an effort to win type of deal, you know? So, I mean, obviously, like, there's a big difference between New York Red Bulls and Swope Park. I mean, Anybody could tell you that.
So I'm going to use that little that line there as the segue. The games you should win. Speaking of, we're going to preview Swope Park real quick, and honestly, with two teams to preview in two different competitions tonight, you and I talked about this. Like we said, Swope Park is what 1-6-3. They've got a -11 goal differential. You know, they've got 6 points total on the year. Even with Oduro suspended, Diakite suspended, this is still a game that I feel like we should win pretty easily. I'm really not super inclined to sit here and compare statistical categories. And honestly, one of the reasons why, going through some of them, it makes it sound as if these teams are pretty much equal in attacking terms. Defensively, we're still so much far and ahead. What I would do is for this game... this is the first time we played Swope Park. Don't know a ton about them as a team. They're Sporting Kansas City's affiliate, their B team. With these two guys suspended, who do you see filling in? And you know, Neil has shown that he really likes this 3-5-2 formation. Assuming we stick with the same formation, what guys do you see filling in and taking Diakite's spot and Oduro's spot?
Well, I think in some ways, I mean, we haven't really seen a whole lot of terms of what players would fit in, but I think it would be fair to say that Kone would probably fit in as the center defender for Diakite. He's done it for the Open Cup game. Whenever we've tried to bring in somebody to act as a fourth defender, if we're trying to save a lead, Kone's usually been one of the guys that come in to do that role. So I think that would be a fair assumption to make. As far as Diakite and his replacement. For Oduro, that's a bit more problematic because we really haven't had much of experience for other players. I saw one suggestion online today was having Doherty start in that position. Mm-hmm. I think that would make sense. I don't know, from what I've seen this year of him, the only thing that has me worried is that Oduro flies around the field. Now, granted, a bit sometimes, you know, recklessly. That's why he's had so many yellow cards this year so far. But he does have a tendency of flying around the field. Doherty does not have, at least from what I can see this year, he doesn't have the same kind of intensity like that. So that'd be the only thing that I'd be worried about when it comes to comparing those two players face-to-face, is that I don't know if Doherty would be up to covering the amount of field that Oduro does on a game-to-game basis. Because I would bet that if you compare starts, I bet Oduro probably covers more ground every game than Doherty does in their roles. Now, granted, they play slightly different positions even when they're on the field together, but I think the data would probably back up if that was even... I don't even know if that data exists for distance ran as far as that's concerned.
I mean, not in a form that's probably available to us, but I'm sure that the team has it, yeah.
Exactly, but I think it would make sense to see Doherty go out there. There haven't been a lot of... I mean, we really haven't seen a lot of opportunities for other players to take that role the last, year and a half now? I mean, because Neil pretty much slotted him into that role really quickly last year.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. The big thing when it comes to this weekend, as far as Swope Park is concerned, is the fact that only two games this year have they allowed or prevented a team from scoring more than one goal during a game? Only two.
So let's score often and score early.
Exactly. I mean, when you have a team that gives up basically two or more almost every time they take the field, especially in a week where we're missing two important defensive components, starting components at least. I mean, obviously our bench has proven that they're up for the task. This is definitely a game where we need to go out and definitely put a goal or two in by halftime, because we, you don't want to give Swope Park any chance at a, hey, we can do this thought.
Right.
Hey. You know, especially with a team that they're extremely young. I mean, obviously it's a two team, but a little unlike New York Red Bulls, Swope Park is a bunch of just totally unproven players. When you go through the actual dedicated Swope Park roster, they're all children. Very little of them have professional experience of any kind. So, you know, that's the type of play. It kind of reminds me a lot of what Toronto FC 2 was last year.
Right, right.
Where it was just a bunch of, like, children almost on the field. That kind of reminds me a lot of what Swope Park is looking like when I look at their roster. And, of course, I don't know how much movement we've seen. I haven't had a chance to really dive into who on Kansas City has been bouncing back and forth, or who makes guest appearances on a regular basis, or how often that happens. Because obviously with New York Red Bulls, it happens all the time. That's one reason why that team is always good on the table, is they have players that bounce back and forth all the time, which kudos to New York Red Bulls for having that kind of movement. But I don't know if Kansas City does the same thing. And so that's something to think about as far as taking advantage of maybe that inexperience, that shakiness. Like I said, scoring early is going to be important, because we need to make sure that they don't feel like they have a chance at ever getting into this game. Because again, it's a bunch of kids with nothing to lose. You don't want to give them a breathing chance if they know you're missing two important defensive players.
So here's,
especially in the middle of the field.
True. Here's something I was kind of thinking about the last few minutes as we've been talking about this. You know, the last Open Cup game, we kind of had the advantage of basically a week off before. Neil Collins made a couple changes to the roster, but still put out a serious lineup that showed he was taking the tournament seriously. This weekend, we've got some enforced changes due to the suspensions. But also, you're playing an already weaker opponent who has played. They're playing, tonight, right now? Right, I said that. So they're tied with Memphis right
now.
Yeah,
playing Memphis. Yeah,
they played on Saturday. They're playing tonight, and then they're going to play on Saturday again. So they're a team that's had to do a lot of playing and a lot of traveling. Might this be a chance to make some other changes besides just those two?
And, I think you're going to,
and maybe save some of these guys for Tuesday night next week in the Open Cup.
Yeah, and I honestly think that this would be a good chance to maybe try that. Now, granted, again, I mean, Neil's kind of surprised me at times, too. But as far as, like, the fact that Caleb hasn't, like, sat the bench all year, he just keeps – that motor just keeps running.
Right.
Who knows what to expect sometimes. I would tend to believe that this is a game that you might rest some people, because, I mean, we're going to preview Oklahoma here in a minute. But to me, I mean, obviously you want to get past this game to play an MLS team. So – again, I always favor Open Cup over regular season, especially in a season that you've had a good start to the league. I would absolutely rest players. If it meant that we're fresher and more capable against playing Oklahoma, I'm doing it. Like, I absolutely would do it. And that, to me, is funny because, like, I love the fact that Diakite and Adoro have a night off, because that means they're going to be fresh,
right,
against Oklahoma. And I'm like, okay, where's the problem here? Like, this works out really well for me.
Like, you know, last time we were talking about this, we were like, well, man, we got a Saturday game and then a Tuesday game and then a Saturday game, and now it's like, you know, it's not that bad. We got a couple guys suspended, took one for the team, got a Saturday off. It's Swope Park, who I feel like we're just building up this giant, like, pool of negative karma by just bashing him the entire time. But still, I think the Rowdies can overcome even us to get the result this weekend. So real quick, prediction, throw it out there. I'm going to say 3-1.
I'm going to say another 2-0.
I don't know why every time I say, like, something one, I'm like, wait a second, why am I thinking that anybody's going to score? Very few have.
I'm just very happy the fact that I was wrong. I thought it'd be a 2-1 loss last week, so I'm more than thrilled by the result.
I went 2-2, and I got part of it right.
Yeah.
I should also mention this came up during the game. So, you know, Dan last year got the tattoo from the Guinzotti hat trick. Well, there we are in the Bayshore Beer Garden. Tejada's got a brace, and a couple people around me are like, so you going to do it too? And I'm like, all right. So I put it out there. People took note of it. I said, I will put this offer up for the remainder of the season. Tejada scores a hat trick, and I'm getting ink. I believe I refer to it as a tramp stamp.
Good.
And some people were saying, it's going to be this, it's going to be that. I'll tell you right now, it's going to be the Rowdies logo. As the
I will say this. I'm not ready to do anything like that. I don't have any tattoos right now anyways. So I don't know if you do. I have none.
I'm old and boring.
Yeah. I'm definitely one that believes that we need people getting ink for the Rowdies,
yeah,
or the supporters or whatever. Like, I fully believe that that's something that we should see more of. And I honestly, I've thought about it over the years. I'm still considering one, probably like a Ralph's Mob tattoo or something like that. Like, because I love everybody in that group and I've been doing it for so long. Like, I would do that. Like, if I'm going to probably do anything, I think for ink, it's probably going to do a Ralph's Mob tattoo at some point. That's probably where I'm aiming.
You know, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if Tejada gets 3 against Swope Park.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Especially because he is aware of the bet.
Then so, again, it's assuming he plays. I mean, that might be a time to give him a couple extra days of rest because we want to win against Oklahoma, because that's going to be...
I mean, he could come on for 30 minutes as a sub, and I'm going to hold my breath. Especially because he retweeted it. He's aware of this. He's giving him something to go for now, I think, at this point.
He was totally, like, he was totally challenge accepted the moment you... The moment you threw that out there, he was all over it.
This is why I shouldn't watch the entire game in the beer garden. I'm just going to say that right now. All right, so you mentioned talking about OKC. Let's do that. OKC started out, and I'm going to kind of run through results and do a little modified preview here. Started out pretty hot on the year. They tore up in the preseason, just beat everybody. Deshaun Brown, a name we should all remember, was scoring buckets of gold from the preseason, hit a couple in, I want to say, the first two games. They won their first two, 3-1 on the road to El Paso, and then 2-1 at home versus the Las Vegas Wynaldas before going on the road to Sacramento, getting beat there. Then they lost 3 of their next 4 and drew the other one. They lost 4-1 to Sacramento, 3-3 to draw to Reno, lost at home to Portland Timbers 2, lost on the road to Rio Grande Valley FC, which I will admit, still not knowing a ton about a lot of Western Conference teams, but it seems like those are two teams you probably don't lose to if you're going to be taken seriously as a top-of-the-conference contender. Got a win over Orange County SC, who was one of the best teams in the league last year. Drew with Tulsa, edged to the Tacoma Defiance 2-1 before dropping a result by the same line to Austin. And then their last game drew 1-1 with Real Monarchs. They do play this Saturday at home versus Colorado Springs. Then will host us on Tuesday, and then they face LA Galaxy 2 the weekend after. Have been a pretty strong team so far. They're 4-4-3 on the year. A lot like us in recent years, they are much better at home than they are on the road. They're 3-1-1 at home. They're 1-3-2 on the road. And currently 2-1-2 in their last 5 games. Let me pull up some of their stat leaders. So far, Deshaun Brown with 7 goals on the 7 appearances and 6 goals on the season, leading them. The next two players have the same amount of goals as he has combined, so he's definitely been the focal point of their offense. Omar Gordon with 4 assists, Cordell Cato with 3 assists, and Alexi Bassetti with 2. Several other players with 1 on the other hand. Now, I need to go back and look and see. Deshaun Brown's got a 7 appearances in 11 games. I don't know if he's been injured, if he's been left out. I don't know if he got called up on international duty for the Gold Cup. He might be on that list too, coming up soon.
Which player? I zoned out for a second. What was the player name?
Deshaun Brown.
No, he played this weekend.
Well, he's only got 7 appearances in 11 games, so he's missed a few games for some reason.
Well, there hasn't been any international duty, so maybe he had a tweaked ankle or something like that.
Yeah, it could be. I wonder if he's got international duty coming up, though, because he plays for Jamaica, right?
Well, that's the national team he represents, and he's not the only one that makes appearances for Jamaica on this team. That was one of the things that I noticed when I was running through their roster. I don't know when the next time that they – I know they're getting close to Gold Cup action as far as the call-ups, but I don't – I mean, they're not going to be missing any time.
Right.
I mean, they're going to be there
they won't be missing Tuesday,
for this game,
for sure,
so.
Yeah. In terms of shots, they've got 3 players with more than 10 shots, Cordell Cato, Deshaun Brown, and Omar Gordon. Chances created, their leading player is Alexi Bassetti, 10 appearances, 23 chances. Goalkeeping, they've alternated between 2 players, Cody Lorendi, who's been kind of one of the names up there in the last few years as one of the best keepers in USL, 10 appearances, 35 saves. 1 clean sheet on the season, though, and they've conceded a total of 19 goals. So the opportunities are there. We're going to need our defense to play strong as they have all year, which having some players coming back from a couple days off rest won't be a bad thing. They're currently sitting 9th in the West. They average about 1.7 goals conceded per game. They've given up 3 penalties on the year, which could be a factor to watch out for. They've been pretty well defensively when it comes to tackles, winning 64%, 48% of all duels, 50.1% of aerial duels, which are areas where we tend to suffer statistically. I think a lot due to our lack of height in the forward positions. That might be an area they can take advantage of. Very well when it comes to their passing distribution game, 73% success rate, 42% for their long passes, extremely accurate in their own half, about 89%, 61.5% in the opposition half, majority of their passes going forward, 37%, so they are, with the guys creating chances and Deshaun Brown scoring like he has, at least at the beginning of the season, they're definitely playing an offensive game rather than sitting back. They average about 47% possession on the year, which it seems like this year we've been content to concede possession to certain teams and play on the counter, try and force a mistake and then make it happen. Scored 19 goals. Well, this is 18 goals. But that can't be right. Oh, I see what happened here. So... anyway, 17 of their goals from inside the box, 1 goal from outside the box, 1 direct free kick goal. Similar stats for the Rowdies. Rowdies have 16 goals inside the box, 1 outside. I don't think any on a direct free kick. They've only taken 1 penalty this year and missed it, so we'll see what effect that has. 43 shots on targets, 18 goals scored. So... conversion rate's not, around 20%, so it's not terrible. They average about 55 minutes per goal. No red cards on the year for OKC, 14 yellow cards, so, they play, they're not afraid to get a little physical, get a card if they have to. I think we're in for an interesting game. I haven't watched them to know what to expect as far as lineups, as far as players. But, both of these teams, I think, at this stage are going to take this tournament seriously, and I think we're going to be in for a good match.
Oh, yeah. No. This is going to be a great game. I mean, Oklahoma City has at least 5 players that have a lot of MLS experience or just experience in general at a high level. I mean, Atiba Harris, Javon Watson, Cordell Cato, those are three MLS caliber players. They've been playing for at least 3 or 4 seasons apiece the last couple of years with an MLS squad, if not longer than that, for some of those. So those are some great talents that are just kind of on the edge of being an MLS, regular player. Obviously, Deshaun Brown. I mean, oh my gosh, that guy has it was still sad when we had to leave him, when we had to let him go. I'll never forget that, him and Damian Lowe that year. That was really, really, really sad. Because I watched a couple of games for Oklahoma just to kind of get myself a little bit more acquainted. Deshaun Brown has a cannon for a shot, and he does take them out. So that's going to be one thing that that I'm going to be kind of glad Adoro has to have to be able to close that distance, because he is not afraid to shoot from distance. I mean, that is going to be something that's going to be really important for us to make sure we're not giving him free chances. The other player that has a tendency, Owain Gordon, he's a, like a career player from Montego Bay in Jamaica. I don't, if you've heard about it, that's a team that historically has always been one of the best club teams in Jamaica.
Wasn't that one of the ones that Ricky Hill coached before he came here?
Yes, I do believe so.
I think so.
Yeah, if memory serves, that was the team. I mean, that's a team that, like, they pump talent out that go to MLS all the time. I mean, that is a really, really solid run scouting type department. Like, if you're in Jamaica, that's like one of the teams to play for, you know, if you're worth something. You know, so, and he as an individual, his dribbling is like, he is not afraid to go after people as far as a one-on-one is concerned. And he's really good with the ball at his feet as far as those dribbles and the quick turns and giving himself some space and creating his own space. Like, they have a very, very high-powered attack when it comes to, we need to be on our toes, definitely. And that's one of the things that makes me nervous. Like, this is one of those games where this is going to be a hard match. Now, it's funny to think about the fact that Oklahoma's done so well at home, but if I'm not mistaken, if memory serves, Taft Stadium is a turf field. But I don't think we're playing there.
No, we're playing. The game's going to be at
Oklahoma University.
Yeah, I think it's called Crane Stadium or Crane Field. Let me look it up real quick.
So it's kind of funny because that means that their advantage that they've had playing at home is kind of irrelevant right now. So that actually probably better serves us, because if I'm not mistaken, watching the Open Cup game, I believe that Oklahoma Stadium is grass where they were playing.
John Crane Field, year open 2000, named John Crane in 2002. Surface is grass. Seating capacity, 3,500.
Yep. So I think this actually kind of favors us a little bit, considering we've done so well, and they play better on turf, quite frankly. I mean, as far as even when you look at some of the away games they've had, I think a lot of the away games they've had success with have been on turf. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, they've again, you look at their record, you look at the score lines, they've had some very up and down, very inconsistent results, but that also makes them really dangerous because you don't know what team you're going to get. You know, if they're on their on night, that's a team that's as good as anybody. And they certainly have the talent on the field for it. So, you know, it's going to be Open Cup. It, you know, the energy fans and supporters are certainly going to be behind it. You know, they've had a pretty good fan base for a couple of years now. I mean, they're not that old of a team.
Right.
But, you know, their supporter group, you know, I remember reading a couple stories. Obviously, there was the tragedy back with the terrorist attack in Oklahoma City, you know, back, you know, many years ago now. Mm-hmm. It's been almost, what, 20 or 30 years? You know, they've got a good connection with the city, with those supporters. And, you know, because they did some honoring events surrounding that as a part of, you know, the game day atmosphere and as far as what they do and where they build their identity from as a supporter group. They're going to be up for this game because they know that they're facing one of the best teams. And that if they can get through us, they could probably feel like this could be a turning point in their season. I mean, this is going to be as big of a game for them for the season as it is for us as an individual moment.
Right.
You know, because we're looking at this going, oh, we're riding this massive win streak. We're just going to plow right through this team, and we're just going to make it to an MLS squad. And I'm like, no.
This is a good team.
The fear, though. One of the fears that I've had is, when I was thinking about this today, was that as much as I want to get hyped for Oklahoma, Swope Park is still going to be one of those kind of unpredictable teams that, with players missing, they could potentially pull a shocking, like, draw, for instance, and that would be disappointing.
Yeah, like, so I don't think this is going to work this way, because I don't think Neil lets this happen. But it feels like it has the potential to be a trap game.
Yeah, I could very easily see like to me, the doom and gloom disaster scenario is we only draw Swope, and then we end up. Kind of, it throws our mentality out of whack a little bit because we'd be disappointed in that result. And then Oklahoma ends up surprising us on Tuesday and we end up getting knocked out. That would be the nightmare scenario.
Yeah.
So I hope, generally speaking, that doesn't happen. I don't think it will. Again, I predict 2-0 for Swope Park. So I firmly believe we'll take care of business there. And I hope we absolutely we have to win that game against Oklahoma. Now, mind you, keep in mind the draw for round four, even if we win that game, we have no idea what's going on in the Open Cup until Thursday of next week.
Until, yeah, that's when they're not doing it Wednesday. They're going to do it on Thursday, right?
They're going to do it. They're going to do the draw on Thursday because a lot of those games are on Wednesday.
Right.
So even when we go on the show next week, we will have no idea who we're playing.
We can still recklessly speculate, though. I mean, there's no problem with that.
Well, I mean, true, but I mean, this is also the same organization that had us play against Seattle and Portland. So, I mean, at this point, how do you even predict?
But I mean, that was before they made those changes that kind of emphasized geographical, fixtures for these early matches, right?
Well, except that hasn't necessarily happened because,
we're going to OKC, so.
Exactly. I mean, it works only as long as there's enough teams in the regions to actually make it work.
Right, right, right.
I mean, again, like you saw the fact that we went up against Seattle, Portland. Of course, that was before some of the restructuring, but that was because they kind of ran out of teams to pair up against. So it kind of depends on where in the country you start for pairing teams. And then you start looking at who has the best airports to travel. Well, guess what? TIA is a pretty amazing airport. So we can pretty much go wherever we want in the whole country, pretty much at the drop of a hat.
And it's easy for teams to come here as well, too.
Exactly. And so I think for round four, assuming we can get through OKC, round four could be a Texas team. I mean, it wouldn't be that surprising to be paired up against a Houston or Dallas, or we could be literally an hour and a half down the road in Orlando. There's literally no telling. We have no idea. Wait, we have literally no idea, because if I'm not mistaken, a lot of the set brackets for regions don't start until the quarterfinal round.
If
memory serves on the way they do the regionals. So round four, you could be literally anywhere.
Yeah, I think when we get to the first round of lower divisions versus top division, I think at that point they're basically breaking the country into four kind of regions. You got your Southeast, your Southwest, North. So yeah, you've got Atlanta, you've got Orlando, you've got the Texas teams, you've got a handful of teams it could be, and they may be even putting some of these ping pong balls in the freezer to try to avoid certain matchups. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
Never know what's going to happen. I did get some news from reliable sources. That sounds like breaking news, whatever. So Neil Collins was at the Sarasota Metropolis game on Monday night, which sadly I was supposed to be at, but had a ticket, but something came up and I ended up not being able to go. Said that the New York player was fine, so good news from there. Sarasota did have another home game tonight and lost their first game of season 2-1 to the Villages. So, whatever. They have another one on Saturday. Obviously, I won't be able to go because I can't be in two places at once. Anything else we want to say about the OKC matchup?
As far as tactics and otherwise, no. But do we have predictions? What do you think will be the final score of the Open Cup at Oklahoma?
Man, this is a tough one. I don't know. I can't make a prediction. I don't know enough about Oklahoma. I mean, to me, it feels like an extra time kind of game.
Absolutely.
Hopefully not penalties, but it feels like extra time.
And darn you for saying that, because that's where I was going to go with it.
It's just the weird feeling I get. Not the weird feeling I get when I eat Chipotle, but the weird feeling that I get. I don't know. I'm going to have to throw something out there over the weekend and see. I got to do a little studying, but it feels like this is going to be an extra time game. This could be a energy draining kind of game, no pun intended.
I would say, based on what I've seen from some of the games that I got a chance to watch this last week, it's going to be 1-1 after 90, and I think the Rowdies pull out a 2-1 win in added extra time.
Okay.
That's where I'm going to go. I'm thinking 2-1, but it takes extra time.
I can go with that.
I
had a kind of a 1-1 feeling to begin with. DeShorn scores against us will be my prediction.
I mean, he's got a cannon. He could probably score from 30 yards out. I mean, it's without even breathing. I mean, he is.
I don't think he'll be as quick as that 8-second goal in what was it, Tacoma or Portland over the weekend? Did you see that?
They didn't. They.
One of those teams scored literally.
No, they played somebody else.
One of those teams scored literally off.
They got scored on it. They got scored on in like the 92nd minute or something like that. It was like the very end of the game.
One of those two teams, it was either Tacoma or Portland. I want to say it was Portland, scored like 8 seconds into the game. It's the fastest goal in USL history.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. I saw the clip of that.
And literally just, you know, dribbled from the kickoff. Guy got forward, passed, like leaked through to him, and he was off and then scored.
It's almost like one of those like charity goals where somebody like a cancer survivor or something gets to go out and just dribble around everybody on a kickoff. It was almost like one of those.
Yeah.
That 8-second goal.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember watching that clip going like, how is that possible? You all are professional players. Like what?
Or the Darren Sunday Maddox thing. Goal versus Cincy. Did you see that? I mean, versus Orlando for Cincy. Did you see that over the weekend?
Yeah.
Took on like four guys by himself in the box and scored.
And then since he does best and just decided to like, you know, melt.
They melted like a bowl of Skyline chili, which means they also smelled bad at the same time. So last thing we were going to talk about, and we're already over an hour, but I want to throw this one in here. We'll push the USL Academy Cup back again. It doesn't start till February. We got time to talk about it. But the latest round in Soccer Wars is not going to be two leagues trying to put a team in the same town, same state, same region, whatever. The newest one, and I've read one short news story about this. I haven't had much time to go digging a lot deeper into it. But apparently USL is now involved in litigation with the UPSL, the United Premier Soccer League, basically alleging copyright infringement, trademark, that kind of stuff, that the UPSL name and logo is not distinctive enough from the USL and could cause confusion. What are your thoughts on this, Steven?
Here's the thing. You live in a society where everything becomes a lawsuit because, and I'm going to be honest, we're going to play a little devil's advocate on this, is that for a certain point of view, you have to be as a corporation, because especially when it comes to like trademark, copyright infringement, things of that nature. Granted, I'm not a lawyer, I haven't attended law school or anything like that, but from what I've understood of the situations involving those types of lawsuits, the problem isn't whether they have a valid claim or not to claiming an infringement. The problem is that if you don't show effort to defending your mark at every opportunity you find where somebody even remotely comes close to infringing on it, you've made yourself weak legally if somebody blatantly does it later down the line.
Yeah, it's why Disney goes after daycares that paint Mickey Mouse on their walls.
It's why Susan G. Komen goes after anybody that does anything for The Cure. Like, if you don't defend your trademark or your copyright for every single little thing that's out there, you make your case weaker when it really counts against a big-time infringement. And that's – as much as I hate the fact that U.S. soccer just likes to eat itself because we don't have a federation that's independent as like a kind of an advisory board or – a mediator to this kind of situation, because like in my mind that's what the federation's role is supposed to be, is a mediator. You know, they're supposed to be here to make sure that all the individual leagues in this country are playing nice with each other and trying to create fashion a pyramid of sorts, and obviously that's not what our federation is, because it's basically one and the same with MLS. So our federation is kind of more of just a marketing tool, really. But
And when it comes to these disputes between lower division leagues and teams and stuff, there is not a better example of Jeffersonian laissez-faire mentality than just U.S. soccer saying, go figure it out.
Yeah, exactly, because they don't care. It's beneath them. So, like, they don't care. For them, in some ways, them not saying anything is more of an endorsement for USL for pursuing this type of litigation.
Right.
Because if they didn't like it, then they would say something to USL to say, hey, let's pull this back a bit. But the fact that they're willing to let it happen is their basically their quiet endorsement. Now, again, like I said, to a certain degree, when it comes to corporate law, you have to do these kinds of lawsuits. It's kind of one of like just the nasty parts about being a corporation. Like, you kind of have to do these things, even if you don't want to.
Right.
But that being said, the legitimacy of the case. Obviously, I think the logo question is just complete just fluff as far as the lawsuit to try and make it look a little bit more padded than it really is. I think it all comes down to the name, UPSL versus USL.
Well, there's the name. I've got the story up here, and this is on protagonistsoccer.com. I'll throw the link out there in the show notes later, or tweet it or something. From the filing, this is a quote from their article, from the filing, it appears that USL's main beef is that in or around 2017, UPSL began efforts to push UPSL into professional soccer play on a national level. Before that time, the UPSL was comprised of a handful of recreational, non-professional adult men's soccer teams that played against one another in regional matches in the greater Los Angeles area. As such, UPSL did not compete with USL in any meaningful way. But that changed, according to the USL, when in a short period of time, UPSL saturated the market with teams dubbed professional soccer teams. Much of the complaint is aimed at blasting UPSL for daring to refer to itself or its teams as professional, pointing out that the league has not been sanctioned by United States Soccer Federation as a professional league, whereas USL Championship and USL League One are both sanctioned. It also takes shots at the difference in the quality of online streams, stating that USL has partnered with ESPN to broadcast these matches using state-of-the-art technology. On information and belief, games streamed by UPSL often feature an amateur grainy display and poor audio quality. So they do mention, you know, there is mention about the logo being, you know, similar in terms of the colors being used. To me, the way it's always been described is that, you know, what would a reasonable person believe by looking at it? And I don't know that either of us, not that we're not reasonable, but we're too informed, at least when it comes to these two leagues, or at least one in particular, to know the difference between them. So I'm not going to judge it on that part of it. The calling themselves professional when they're not sanctioned by U.S. Soccer, the part about the streaming stuff, could be some of this could be maybe an attempt into creating a serious enough sounding lawsuit that UPSL is forced to defend it, and do they have the resources to do that in court?
Oh, well, exactly. And I think, and again, that's what a lot of lawsuits are about, is just basically you scare the other party into just doing what you want. Again, keep in mind, as far as some of this might be like legal strategy to a certain degree, right? It's so, when you hear the lawsuit talking about, well, now they started talking about being professional teams. That's not you can't sue somebody for saying that I'm going to have a professional soccer league. The problem is that, you know, that's not really the basis of the lawsuit per se. It's the fact that they went national, that they created a grounds to sue in general. Because that was part of the point, right? Is that as long as they were a regional league, the USL didn't care, because they weren't even trying to be competition to USL as a whole. So the moment UPSL tries to go after a national level audience, immediately USL goes, you've given us grounds to sue now. And that's all it is. That's the whole point of bringing up that subject, is that's the reason and the grounds for making the lawsuit, is that you went national. So it's not even the fact that they're calling themselves professional per se, because we all know that even if they are, it's not by much, you know. The quality of – you don't sue somebody for copyright infringement or trade if they're – I mean, literally, the lawsuit said they're grainy images. Like, seriously, that's not a reason to spur litigation because – a team is broadcasting on Facebook Live and it's not the perfect of images. Like, who cares? Like, that doesn't mean – that's not impacting your business, especially on a copyright grounds at all. I think this entirely really comes down to name.
Yeah.
And I think it – because even the logos don't even match, because USL Championship, it's black, white, and gold. So it's not even red, white, and blue anymore when it comes to – how the individual leagues kind of brand themselves. I think like the USL logo is like a rectangle logo, and I think it might be red, white, blue, but the individual divisions don't use those colors.
Right, right.
So so like even then there's not a lot of crossover as to what like is deemed copyright or trademark infringement. It's I think it's literally just the acronyms themselves. USL versus UPSL. And I think that's the whole basis of the lawsuit. And quite frankly, do they have a case on that grounds? They might. I would bet that a decent lawyer, which again, I'm sure USL can afford whoever they need. I'm sure a good lawyer can phrase an argument saying that those two acronyms are so close that it becomes an issue. And again, even if it isn't, and even if their case is complete hogwash when it comes to actual lawyers debating this, the problem is if the UPSL doesn't have the resources to fight the lawsuit, then it doesn't matter if it's a good case or not. They're going to – USL will win the case by default.
Right.
Because if UPSL can't fight it, then there is no argument. You know, it's just a one-sided discussion. Here's your cease and desist. You have a nice day. And again, part of this too is we don't know the specifics as to what caused the lawsuit, right? Because like UPSL talking about going national and trying to grow a professional multi-tier, I think they're part of the whole pro-rel zealotry arguments as far as that whole sphere of soccer fan. They've been talking about this for like a long time. I remember hearing about this like 2 years ago about UPSL and doing, we're trying to do what they do. So them trying to go national, them trying to proclaim themselves as being a professional level, that's none of that's new. So something must have happened in the background, because you alluded to this in the beginning where you kind of dismissed this as an idea where instead of it being like, you know, soccer wars being two organizations trying to attract a specific ownership group to their league, I actually wonder if maybe that is what's really happening behind the scenes. Because I wonder if UPSL and maybe USL for, say, a League One franchise maybe were competing with the same ownership group. And I'm wondering, and again, this is entirely speculation, but it kind of makes sense to me a little bit. Where I'm wondering if UPSL was trying to pitch to this ownership group that they're fighting over or trying to convince that, hey, we're this professional level organization and this is what we're doing. And I'm wondering if that's really what's going on, because that's the one thing about all these lawsuits over the years. Again, if you've been following this since 2010, like I have, and you followed like the Brian Kvaerstad blogs when he was running IMS Soccer News and things like that. That was always the thing going on in the background, is that like after the fact you found out the timeline of what was going on in the background was, oh, by the way, they actually filed this lawsuit because they started talking to Gordon Hartman or whatever.
Right.
And you found that you didn't find that out until like 2 or 3 years after the fact that was like part of the real reason why there was a lawsuit. So I actually wonder if the real trigger for this is that there was talk about a competition of an ownership group, and USL's trying to prevent UPSL from even having the conversation with this competing owner.
I definitely a possibility. I mean, we know the whole thing about the USL, was it League Two team in League One in Chattanooga, was a failed attempt to buy Chattanooga FC that ended up turning into starting a new club in the area
it was a disgruntled employee that decided to he got some financial backing and the support of USL and decided to open up a competing group when he couldn't convince the Chattanooga owners to jump into the league.
Right.
You know, that was the whole reason. But of course, that's been kind of USL's operating mantra. Look at the Tampa Bay Rowdies and VSI Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was kind of the whole thing here. I think from what I understand, some of that was they couldn't try to kill us.
Yeah. And, you know, did very poorly in that.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Which playing in Plant City somehow doesn't lend yourself to playing on the waterfront in St. Pete.
And for me, you know, part of the forgiveness on this is the fact that that wasn't Jake Edwards.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, that was a Papadakis-run decision. I mean, in terms of the league as a whole. So as much as I want to be angry at them, I am. But that's also not Jake.
Yeah,
because Jake wasn't involved in any of that at that point. He wasn't hired for many years later. So, and that's who we're involved with right now is Jake.
Yeah,
as far as the hands-on leader in the league itself. So, I'm kind of willing to give some forgiveness to the league as to what happened there. But at the same time, Jake is in charge of the league when they're looking at the Chattanooga situation. Because to me, Chattanooga Red Wolves, I hate to say it, shouldn't exist.
Like, yeah, that not a fan of how they've gone about that. But
that's bad to me.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on this and share more info as it comes. But since you named Jake out there, I'm gonna use that to slide into the last bit. So the two guests we were possibly going to be talking to tonight was the guy that makes us all look good, Jake. Jake Nutting is in town. Was at the game on Saturday. Got to spend some time with him. It's always good to see Jake. He's working on some stuff for the site and for the bench, which, by the way, the bench will not be this weekend, even though it's the last weekend of the month. Since there's an Open Cup game on Tuesday, we're going to kind of time it to publish with that. So look for it around then. Jake either went to training today or he's going to go tomorrow, hopefully, and bring back some info from there, hopefully get some interviews done. But Jake, and then the other guest was going to be our most recent co-host Dan with his news. The news why he left, if you haven't been following him online or on Twitter or on Facebook. But I see from Facebook that the two of them are at the Rays game tonight, so I'm going to assume they're not calling in. So we'll make Dan's announcement for him. Dan is running for the state house of representatives from his district in Pasco County.
Yeah, and it's great. It's that was the reason why I'm on the show, actually. Dan and I are close friends. We've been close friends for a long time. So when he started talking about, like, really kind of openly with us about possibly running, you know, him and Matt to a certain degree, like you too, that was like, you guys reached out to me when he decided he had made up his mind that he was going to really do it.
Yeah.
And he was going to run. So, yeah, he is running in a district, I believe, that has an average of, from what I understand, about 70,000 voters on average. And he is running in basically what is, for those of you that are outside of Florida, for instance, Dan is running in a district that already has, if I'm not mistaken, the youngest state-level representative in Florida right
now.
Yeah,
I think she's 23, three-term incumbent.
She's 23. Yep, she's 23. She's a recent graduate of University of Central Florida, I believe. Her family, she comes from a politic family. So, like, her father has been heavily involved in Pasco County politics, and she basically ran with the support of the local Republican Party, which, if you know this area at all, you know, you would know this, because, like, for instance, I've been involved in the past at a younger age with the Republican Party locally. They are really, really hyper organized.
Yep.
And when you compare that and the stories that I've compared, as far as, like, when you compare notes as you get older, like, hey, this is what we do, what do you guys do? It's so wildly different compared to what goes on in the local Democrat parties, where the local Democrat parties hardly exist by comparison.
Right,
I mean,
right.
It's the local Democrat politicians that usually make it are do it on their own merit and their own connections. Like, the party itself in this area hardly exists to a certain degree. So Dan's basically going against one of these very well-connected people, but he's now competing in what will probably be the youngest race of, you know, competitors? I'm not sure what the right word, candidates.
Candidates, yeah.
In the state of Florida for a state-level politician when his election comes up next year. Because I believe that's a 2020 election. So,
right.
You know, I mean, that's going to be a fascinating storyline when it comes to Florida politics. So we all support him. We all love him. We wish him the best on this. He's got a long road ahead. I mean, he's going to get a good taste. I mean, we know people that are involved in the local soccer community, fans of various teams and things, who have family members that run in this area, that run three or four or five different elections, sometimes never get in. And so, you know, we also know of people that have run two or three times and lost those three, and then they end up winning it on their fourth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's no question about it. He's in for a tough race. He's in a very, very red district. So he's running as a member of the Democrat Party locally. That's going to be a tough race for him. There's no question about it. But we all know Jay. We all know Dan. Dan's amazing. He's got a personality that's second to none.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the other thing. He is incredibly smart when it comes to following local politics and seeing what the needs of the local area are. He has been very much in tune with the average person in Pasco. And he honestly is taking a leap of faith right now, where it's he sees an issue or a series of issues, and he's going based on his own initiative of we need change. And whether you agree or not with any particular position he'll take, I respect him for the fact that he's willing to stand up and just do it.
Yeah.
And put himself out there. And like I said, for better or worse, he's a better man for doing it. He's better than I am, because I don't think I've got the guts to do that.
No.
It's
not a desire. I did appreciate the there's a website called floridapolitics.com, which I now know about because Dan sent me the screenshot. Who in their article mentioning that he has filed to run for this office. Did mention the podcast and the website by name, so I appreciate all the publicity we can get. I don't know if it means anything, or if you'll even publicly acknowledge this, but we will go ahead and give him our endorsement in the Pasco State House race for whatever district. I believe it's District 36 in Pasco. So there you go. I don't know if we're the first official ones, but we'll put it out there. We do endorse wholeheartedly Dan for State House. So we'll have him on at some point to talk about it, maybe as it goes on. Yeah, it's definitely going to be a tough one. I was talking to some people on Saturday because it was kind of the buzz around the tailgate from all the podcast fans, and it was like, well, does he think he has a chance to win? And I'm like, well, you know, sometimes you do things where you don't know if you have a chance to win. You do it because it needs to be done. Like, I've kind of always been of the mind that no election, regardless of who's in office, should be running unopposed. There should always be someone out there to provide a choice or an alternate opinion, even if it's one that I wouldn't agree with. Not that I do in this case, because Dan and I are pretty much in the same place politically as with each other. But that's the way the system should be, like, you know, in my opinion. Anyway.
Yeah, because I mean, ideally speaking, when it comes to ideal politics in a fantasy land, it's even if you don't win, if you can garner enough opposition, at least it makes the other candidate go, hey, there's a competing point of view by a large percentage of my constituency.
Yeah, and hold them somewhat maybe, accountable, hopefully. You know,
yeah, so maybe there is something I need to do to try and reach out to that group to – because, again, there's politicians even then – I mean, everybody's still self-serving to a certain degree. So you don't want to put yourself in a vulnerable position where, okay, say you beat this candidate by 60-40, but you would beat the person before him like 80-20. So there was a huge jump there. You're trending in the wrong direction. So, I mean, there's a certain – even if he loses, maybe he's opening up the door for the next person in line. Or maybe he runs again, even if he doesn't win. So we'll see. I mean, it'll be fun to watch. He's definitely going to have our support. And so it'll be fun to watch this. And we wish him all the best of the luck.
One last thing before we sign off. The show's been on Radio St. Pete for at least a year now. And I got some news over the weekend. One of the other radio shows on St. Pete, hosted by a guy named Dr. Chuck Stevens. Chuck passed away over the weekend from cancer, much like the Bay Area lost another voice in local radio, Steve Dumig, recently this week, I guess, to the same thing. So our condolences and thoughts to his family and friends and listeners and fans and everyone. Cancer sucks. And we'll get to more of that stuff when Gold comes around again, because that's something that we're big on here. All right, Stephen, we're at like an hour and a half. We got to wrap this up.
Yep. Well, that's what we were kind of thinking of. Is it gonna be a really, really long show?
Like, if people are spending an hour and a half doing something, they should be going to a game, not listening to us.
No, if you're doing something right now, you better be painting TIFOs, because from what I understand, we are working on a TIFO again. Another big, giant, nice, massive one here. Not necessarily for, I don't know if it'll be up for this weekend per se, but we're working on a big one right now. I know the mob is. So if you're not listening, if you are at home listening and not.
Uh-oh, I'm off. so that he couldn't give any more info there. There is. Now, I heard there was one possibly for this weekend. I know the Sarasota guys are working on one, too. I don't know if this is going to be the same thing, but I kind of have a feeling it is. It definitely, you know, this could be good listening to while you're at TIFO painting. I'm anxious to see it because I've heard what it's going to look like. Another good reason to come on Saturday, see what this is. But that's it. Let's close this out and send it off into the internetiverse. We'll be back with you guys on Wednesday. If you guys are south of the Skyway, I'll be at Shamrock on Tuesday night to watch the game, the Open Cup game. I'll be we'll be on the air again next Wednesday talking about the Open Cup game and looking ahead towards the weekend after. And then as of next Friday, man, I'm on summer vacation. I'm excited. I'm already planning it out. Like, I've got my Gold Cup watch schedule. I've got my Women's World Cup watch schedule. I've got my big soccer trip to just outside Orlando planned to go watch Madison play Orlando City B at some point. Coming up, actually, it's like in like 2 weeks. I gotta get on that. I'm excited. There always seems to be a lot of soccer when summer rolls around, which is why I think a lot of soccer fans are also teachers, because that way we get off in time to travel and go see games. Steven, thank you for taking time this evening to spend with me. I appreciate it. We haven't apparently quite ironed out all the technical problems, but we think we know what it is. So we'll experiment on some things between now and next time and try and get that sorted out. We love yous. What do you got?
Ser fiera es un orgullo. And if you don't know what that means, roughly, that is the call sign for Club Leon. We are in the championship games. Two-leg series starts tomorrow night. Club Leon playing against Tigres. So I am on cloud nine because I'm watching that game tomorrow night. And second leg is going to be on Sunday night at 8:00. So here's hoping my team in Mexico and our boy William Yarborough, a good American boy. hopefully we bring home a trophy. We've already qualified, obviously, just by getting there for the Champions League. So my dream scenario of the Rowdies winning the Open Cup and getting a chance to play Club Leon in the Champions League is only one step closer now. So
still alive.
I mean, yeah, it's a dream, but I'm thrilled. Like I said, they play tomorrow night, first leg at Tigres, and then Sunday night is in Leon, and I am La Fiera. Dale Leon.
I'm going to throw a we love you out to the security guards in the Bayshore Beer Garden, who at first saw us moving our table up closer to the rail to get a nicer vantage point for the game, and then saying, guys, you can't do that. And then when we pointed out that like every other table had been moved up there, he's like, oh, well, fine. So thank you, those guys, for being cool. Shout out also to Domodoro and Pop Diakite. You got red from the refs, but you're always in our hearts. You guys will be back soon, and we'll see you then. Thank you, as always, to Wolfface for the theme song, to Radio St. Pete for the platform, to Shamrock Pug for putting up with us on live shows every now and then. We should have some more coming up soon. Thank you to all of you for making time in your schedule to listen to us, whether it's live or later. Please continue to share, subscribe, rate, and review, and hopefully get us out in front of more people who would like to listen to this too, for various odd reasons. If you'd like to support the show on an ongoing basis, check us out on patreon.com/unusedsubspod. At the rate that Tejada is scoring goals, we're going to need tattoo money anyway. So please help us out with that. Thank you, as always, to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. Steven, I'll see you on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. We'll be there.
All right. Let's have some fun. We'll see you guys as well. This has been the Unused Substitutes. Good night.
Go Rowdies.
The Rowdies were here, the Rowdies were there, they kicked the wall around. The Rowdies were here, the